Is it playing poker or just doubling down on stupid? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
It's good to be back with you, Barry. It's good to have you here in the studio. Those of you who listened last week and heard some noise and things on the recording, I'm not really that shocked. We were on Skype, and it was a bad weather day. And sometimes on bad weather days, the Skype signal gets a little touchy, and last week was no exception.
Well, they usually hear weird noises every week
coming out
of this program.
For about 59 minutes and 58 seconds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In two different vocal patterns.
Yeah, that's right. But this week, we fixed that problem by being face-to-face. We had other problems getting up. There's always technical issues, folks, especially when Microsoft is involved. Because I came in and suddenly I'm like, oh, we're in the middle of an update. Well, what havoc will that bring?
And it did bring
a little. And it brought some havoc, yes. So as usual, I had to go digging around for driver software because all of a sudden the update sort of messed up all my driver software.
I know why you tell people about this. It's so that you can get sympathy.
That's it.
Because probably almost everyone who listens to us at one point or the other has had a Microsoft product bug out on them.
Oh, everybody. Anybody. Now, one thing I will say is the difference is my daughters love their Apples. And what I've noticed about Apples.
Macintosh, Galas, Fujis, which ones?
They have their iPhones and their Mac. And you know what happens with those? They have the same problem, except what eventually happens is you can't accept any more operating system updates, and then there's planned obsolescence and things stop working at all. I can pull up an old Microsoft computer that has Windows XP on it. I have one in here, an old P4 processor. I've even got a couple of old 486s. Guess what? They still run. They won't do updates anymore. But Microsoft is right up front. They're like, we're not going to support those anymore. You'll be able to run them in perpetuity while you can still get parts for the computer. But we won't update your operating system. And I'm like, good, because that means I won't have any more driver failures. So I've got a couple of computers I keep around because they've got some records on them and stuff. I know I could download it. But, you know, it's more of an excuse to not take up storage space. With stuff I look at once every 5 years.
See, now, I can't say that because I'm a bit of a hoarder. Well, actually, I'm not really a hoarder. I do eBay reselling with my son, and so therefore, there's stuff that's sitting in my house that's been piled up for a long time that we still go to.
You're not a hoarder unless it's in danger of falling on you.
Okay, been there two or three times and lived to tell about it, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's like these poor old people that disappear and nobody sees them for 6 months or a year, and people finally go in and start cleaning out their house.
Oops.
And they find them under about a half a ton of newspapers that they've had stacked since the 30s.
Yeah, for me it would be comic books or books.
Well, comic books in many cases have value. Newspapers from the 30s that are, you know, because let's face it, in most cases, you can go down to the library and see those on microfiche if you're doing research, unless it's a spectacular headline. Like my grandmother, I think my uncle got them, had the 1969 moon landing, had the Kennedy assassination newspaper.
Can I date check you there just a minute? You just said a word that probably... Oh, with our audience, they probably would remember what that word is. But with the next generation's audience, you just stated something in a foreign tongue that may be of Neptunian origin. That's the word microfiche.
Microfiche.
I challenge you to find places other than the State Library of Ohio where you're going to find microfiche files anymore.
I guess it's all been
been digitized. It's all at a touch of the fingertips online.
Do you remember doing those awful microfiche searches?
I remember doing that not just for school, but for a couple of jobs that I had. Now, you want to talk about a headache, go to some county courthouse and look at their microfiche. Oh, by the way, many of the county courthouses still do have the microfiche.
Well, it's possible. Although I can tell you that even like Lincoln County is rapidly
updating,
digitizing.
Yeah, they're rapid as fast as they can.
Yeah.
And it's not a cheap process for them either. But the point is that as depositories of public records, they have to. They actually have to make sure that those records are accessible to the general public. And Chuck, microfiche is no longer a generally accepted storage method for the general public.
Yeah.
You really do have to keep up with demand, I guess, is what it gets down to. And now that you can put things like old voter records or voter rolls all on, is digitized, things of that nature. I'm sure that you probably, and although I haven't had to do this in a long time because I've had my house for a while, I'm sure that many plat records and mortgage deeds and things are all on electronic media to be accessed.
For the most part, yeah.
Which frankly, in one sense, is a good thing. In the other sense, it scares me to death because knowing how much data collecting and data dumping that happens and what companies and individuals do with that kind of data, it makes you a little nervous about having all that stuff out there that easily accessible.
Here's the problem. We live in a data age, and no matter what we do, it's out there.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
And the fact is that the federal government refuses to protect you, even though that is essentially why they exist, speaks volumes about the federal government.
What, they're not there to grow their reach, control, and power?
Well, they think they are.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we have a problem with a lack of vision of their mission.
Yeah. The fact is, reading, and even a cursory reading of the Constitution, the job of the federal government is to protect rights. Now, lest those of you say, it's to give rights, nope.
But, Chuck, you have just undermined the entire rationale and philosophy of the Democratic Party.
And
maybe part of the Republican Party, too.
I don't want to play party politics because
both sides do.
I guarantee you, yeah, that it's on both sides.
Yes.
Under what denomination of president was the Patriot Act passed?
That would be Republican after a Democrat tried to do it and couldn't get it through.
And couldn't get it through because everybody said, no, this will be abused.
Right.
And guess what? It has been. The whole point about this Trump-Russia investigation and the things that the FBI has done that were illegal, the FISA warrants that were issued in complete violation of the policy, and the applications that were made in complete violation, not just of the policy, but of the law. Nobody's talking about that, but the fact is they violate the law. Points to exactly what's wrong with the Patriot Act.
But Chuck, okay, there are two parts to effective law. You know this, right?
Well, you give me the two parts and I'll tell you, yeah, I knew that.
You do know this. The first part of an effective law is that it has clear penalties.
Yes. Oh, good point.
The second part of an effective law is that it directs certain actors to carry out those penalties.
Yes.
If you don't have either one of those, the law is not worth the paper it's written on.
One of the things that has raised its ugly head and gotten people to do things they wouldn't normally do in this whole trumped-up investigation. And, yeah, I have said trumped-up because in 3 years, basically, they've gotten a couple of little tax convictions, which they could have gotten anyway, and basically they're nuisance convictions.
But just remember, that's how we took down Dillinger. Now, come on.
Oh, actually, you mean and Capone.
Yeah.
We took down
Dillinger with Dillinger guns.
He died of severe lead poisoning. Yeah,
you're right. It's Capone. That's what I was trying.
Yeah, yeah. Dillinger paid the price with severe ounce of lead.
That's right.
Multiply injected.
Don't give them any other ideas.
Oh, no kidding. No. Essentially, one of the Logan Act. The Logan Act has been threatened with for people. Now, if you don't know what the Logan Act is, it is...
You're not alone.
Yeah. You're not by yourself. It'll pop up if you listen really closely to some of this narrative, the Logan Act. Logan Act was passed in 1792.
Yeah, it's thereabouts. In, yeah, 92, 93.
During George Washington's first or second term, and I can't remember. But it... First. Yeah, Barry
during
says
first.
Term,
Barry,
yeah. And the what's it for? It is a prohibition against acting as to either enhance or counteract American diplomatic efforts.
Correct.
So, in other words, every time Jimmy Carter would run off and offer to be a...
Here's the way it's shorthanded defined by Wikipedia, and I think it's very clear. The Logan Act is a United States federal law that criminalizes negotiations by unauthorized persons with foreign governments having a dispute with the United States.
Okay.
Period.
Now, how many convictions have there been since it has been enacted over almost, well, at least 220 years, probably longer?
That's a good question.
Because, zero.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, I'm not exactly sure that it really ever was. And let's back up here a little bit. It wasn't George Washington's first term. It was Thomas Jefferson's first term.
Oh, Jefferson.
It was in the Fifth Congress.
Okay, so it's still over 200
years old.
200 years old,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. In any case, there have been multiple times. John Kerry violated it. By attempting to inject himself into a situation to try to keep the Iran deal alive.
Right.
The awful, awful, yep. awful, awful Iran deal where we paid Iran a huge bribe to sign a nuclear agreement, which they almost immediately violated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be 220 years old. The Logan Act will be 220 years old on January the 30th.
A number of people were told they could be charged with, I think, Paul, the guy who was the White House, the National Security Advisor, who's been convicted of some...
Flynn. Yeah.
Flynn, who basically was convicted wrongly, and somehow some kind of deal was cut with him. It's all murky. But the fact is, he was threatened with a Logan Act violation, and he's like, his attorneys didn't tell him. It's like, it's never been successfully prosecuted ever, and they don't even actually try.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, okay, here's the other problem with the Logan Act, or people trying to say that the Logan Act might apply to this whole Mueller investigation. There's a key phrase in the act, and it's the fact that it's that you have to be, if you negotiate without authority with a foreign government. Now that all sounds right?
Right.
So it looks like we're tracking that has a dispute with the United States. So it has to be something you're negotiating over a disputed point.
There's a reason for that if you think about it.
Oh, absolutely, because it would kill any kind of contacts you could have with foreign officials.
Any international business agreement
could be killed. Could be a violation of the Logan Act.
Could be a violation of the Logan Act.
And that's exactly the reason why that specific phraseology about that the foreign government has to be having a dispute.
Right.
Over an issue with the U.S. that you are not authorized to negotiate that dispute. Regarding, it isn't the you sent a Twitter message over and Vladimir Putin picked it up, so therefore you violated the Logan Act. It doesn't work that way.
Okay, there was an industrialist named Armand Hammer.
Yes, he did. Yes, indeed. Yeah,
Armand Hammer.
Yeah, and folks, it's Armand,
A-R-M-A-N-D,
not Arm and Hammer, yeah. As in the baking soda.
yeah, but I'm not sure he wasn't involved
yes,
in that
he
company.
Yes, he was. He had a piece of that company.
Yes. but you're right, it's Armand Hammer. Armand Hammer was essentially an unregistered lobbyist for the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. He was a pass-through. I'll be quite honest, he was an agent provocateur. He was a big fan of Joseph Stalin, which tells you how really smart this guy was. But presidents would go to this guy, especially Democratic presidents. Franklin Roosevelt loved Arm & Hammer. Why? Because he had Joseph Stalin's ear. He was sympathetic to the international communist movement, and yet he was an American industrialist. That's the kind of guy. He used to pass stuff to the Soviet Union all the time. That's the kind of guy who would have been ripe for a prosecution under the Logan Act.
Oh, absolutely, except for the fact that the company that he owned was a little minor concern called Occidental Petroleum.
Occidental Petroleum, yes. Arm & Hammer was Occidental Petroleum.
What, during that time period, one of the three largest petroleum producers on the planet.
Yeah, exactly. That is why. The Logan Act, and this is what happens sometimes, business and political get mixed in together. You cannot avoid that. And Arm & Hammer had no problem with Joseph Stalin or what mm-hmm. Stalin was trying to do with the Communist International.
Right. And Chuck, let me ask you a question. Have you seen the remakes of movies like The Lone Ranger or...
I avoided that one like the plague.
I was going to say, the one that Napoleon Solo and Man from Uncle.
Man from Uncle.
Have you seen those remakes?
I saw the Man from Uncle. Yeah.
Okay. The star of both of those movies,
Armie Hammer,
is the great grandson of Armand Hammer.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So just a little. A pop culture note to put in there for people. If you've ever seen Armie Hammer in anything in a movie, you're watching the Hammer family. Occidental
yeah.
Petroleum, Logan Act, Soviet Union. Just think about that.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't say we're saying that Armie Hammer has anything to do with being in love with Joseph Stalin or any of that stuff. We have no idea. I have no idea what his political views are. So
nope, me either.
But it's a factoid. You know, just one of those things that pops up. But that being said, this is one of the things that we're seeing in the current climate with the passage of the with the Patriot Act. Basically, the government can investigate you. Now, we always said, basically on a whim, and they said, oh, no, it has to go to a FISA court, and you have to show evidence, and you have to prove that there's evidence of this and that and another thing. Guess what? All they had to do was get a Democratic political operative named Christopher Steele mm-hmm. to dummy up
right.
this dossier that made all kinds of outrageous claims about Trump and his sexual proclivities, supposedly in a Russian hotel room that Barack Obama had slept in a bed that Barack Obama had slept in. I won't go into the salacious details. You can find all that stuff, and if you have a good enough memory, you'll remember what was claimed in the dossier. It's all turning out to be 100% fertilizer. And in fact, it appears that dossier was the skeleton of it was created years before the 2016 presidential campaign for use just in case, break glass in case of Donald Trump.
All right.
It wasn't specifically written for Trump. It was written for someone who globalists did not want to sit
exactly.
in the presidency.
Exactly.
A Ted Cruz, a Sarah Palin, a Michelle Bachmann. Had their campaigns caught fire? It would have been difficult to accuse Michelle Bachmann of that particular crime.
Of having a campaign catch on fire? Yeah.
No, of the crime of going to Russia and doing the things that were supposedly done in the dossier in the bedroom of...
It
would be
right.
a little difficult to believe that.
Uh-huh.
And having met Michelle Bachmann, it would be extremely difficult to believe. She and I did not become close buds, but we did have a long conversation, and Barry was there too. In fact, we sat on a couch at a meeting in St. Louis, Missouri.
Uh-huh. We did,
and had a nice long talk, maybe a couple hours with Michelle Bachmann, long before she ran for. Actually, wasn't she just running for Congress?
Yes, because she had been on a school board.
She'd been on a school
board in Minnesota.
Yeah, and honestly, she was a wonderful person. Still is a wonderful person, I'm guessing. But that being said, that thing was written well before the fact for use. And the fact that Hillary Clinton did collude with Russian agents by paying them backdoor through campaign consultants. Basically, she didn't pay directly because that would be stupid. She paid through campaign consultants and hired this Christopher Steele guy. Now, the word out at the first was there were Republicans involved. And guess what? I still don't dismiss that. I think there were a group of never-Trumpers at the time who are still never-Trumpers who were probably involved. We know John McCain was actively involved in getting that sent over to the FBI. Why? Because it was leaked to him specifically for the purpose that we now know through James Comey. It was leaked to him and all this stuff that's come out with Strzok and Page and McCabe and a lot of these people who have been forced to resign, that it was designed to be... James Comey has admitted that he leaked materials in order to get a special prosecutor appointed.
Absolutely.
And so what they use, it's becoming abundantly clear that what they used was this fake dossier, and everybody knows it was a fake.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows there's nothing to it, and yet you can go out and you can see the paid trolls in the commentary still talking about the dossier, Trump Russia collusion. The New York Times thought they had a big deal because they had a signed contract about from Trump about building a hotel in Moscow in like 2014.
Yep.
And the first thing I said was, gosh, what do you know? A hotelier and a land developer building a hotel in Russia. There's a shock.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, right? Who'd have thought that an American businessman might want to put up a luxury hotel in an up-and-coming business climate? Because the fact is that the Russia's still got problems. But guess what? They have an economy because why? Because their natural resources... They are sitting on the largest repository of natural resources in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
They have untapped riches in gold, in minerals. In fact, when we built the SR-71, remember the Blackbird, plane that was capable of like Mach 3?
Yes, indeed.
That was built out of a special metal. I'm trying to think what it was.
Titanium, wasn't
it? Titanium, but there were some other things in it. Guess who had all the titanium reserves?
Russia.
So what did we do? We kind of surreptitiously obtained, we kind of backdoor obtained the titanium we needed to build the SR-71 so we could spy on the Soviets. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't want to let them know that we were actually taking their...
We didn't want to let them know that we had this plane that basically missiles couldn't shoot down.
Yeah, that's
it. It was capable of outrunning a surface-to-air missile.
Yes, it was.
And it's spectacular. If you ever get a chance to go over to the Air Force Museum, they have the precursor, the YA, I think the YA-22.
Mm-hmm.
They have one of the prototypes over there, and it's not a Blackbird. They might have a Blackbird over there now.
Over at the Air Force
Museum? Air Force Museum.
I haven't been there in a while. I don't know.
I was there about 3 years ago, and I can't remember.
I guess I could have been there last weekend because part of the inaugural events for now Governor DeWine was a family day at the Air Force Museum on Sunday.
Very glad you didn't go.
Yeah, well, with the snow and everything.
Yeah, well.
I just didn't want to go there. So.
Mike DeWine's going to be a bust. You heard it here first, folks. You're going to be gravely disappointed.
You're so negative.
Yes, I know.
you're going to be so negative.
And I said that about John Kasich, and you know what Christian reaction was? You're so negative.
You're so negative, and guess what?
Give him a chance, and guess what? Here we are 8 years later. Oops.
Oh, I guess you might have been right.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
The most commonly heard phrase around our house when I was a kid, to my parents, gee, you were right. I wish we'd listened to you.
I'm still waiting to hear that.
You will.
I know.
Because you and I used to, when we were doing those VAT meeting, the Values Action Team meeting, we'd hear that occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were right on that. Yeah, no kidding. And you know what they did? The same people would go run right out and support guys like John Houston and guys like Mike DeWine, despite the fact that they were cursing his name while he was a member of the Gang of Seven in the United States Senate, while he was voting for gun control, while he was voting for immigration reform, including open borders.
Yep.
Let's not forget any of that, folks. Well, okay, his this is the terminus of his career. If he finishes this term, or if he does run for a second term, which we were discussing the other day, I think we decided he'd be about 81, between 81 and 83 mm-hmm. when he finished his second term, if he finishes it, which we don't think he will.
Yeah.
Not because of health, because of he's gotten done what he needed to do. In any case, that being said, and we kind of started out on a segue on this, but the fact is that the Patriot Act is bad news.
I was on a Schwinn, and, not a segue.
On a segue. Does anybody even know what a segue is anymore?
Yeah, I think they still do.
You know, I haven't seen one. I used to see them every once in a while. I haven't seen one for...
It's been a while, yeah.
For years, yeah.
They're kind of making a comeback, but under different... But I think the Japanese really got a hold of it, and they've changed it up, and I forget what the name of them are now, but yeah, it's
they needed
it's the
to drop
idea.
The price is what they needed. If they
sure.
Remember, it was going to be the transportation revolution. Everybody was going to be using one of these, and they brought it out, and it was $5,000 for a two-wheel scooter with the wheels placed out side by side instead of front to back. Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah,
I'm not paying you $5,000 for a fun toy, especially out here in the country. I know what would happen if I did that out here on Chestnut Hills Road. I'd come around a curve, and someone would come over a hill, and I would be squashed like a bug.
Yep.
On Chestnut Hills Road. So, is there a lot going on with this stuff? Yeah, you need to pay attention to this. Why are we talking about it? Because it keeps popping up. You know, we're getting to the point now where Mueller's going to have to issue a report here pretty quick. Now, what have we got going on? It's of import. Well, we've got the Speaker of the House of Representatives telling the President of the United States that he shouldn't come to the House to deliver his State of the Union address. Why? He would be unsafe there because of the government shutdown.
I think it's more that he'd be unsafe there because crazies like Tlaib and Ocasio-Cortez are actually seated in that House.
Well, even I'm not too worried about those two, at least not from that perspective.
Okay.
Do I think that they are above disrupting the presentation? Oh, not in the slightest.
No.
And perhaps having to be removed by the sergeant at arms. And you know, again, it wouldn't surprise me because the far left of the Democratic Party, who is making a play for leadership, is not above those kinds of things.
No.
And it wouldn't surprise me. However, what Nancy Pelosi is really afraid of is not Trump's safety. It's her own political safety, because Trump will use this opportunity during a government shutdown to embarrass the House leadership over the whole wall thing.
You and I talked about this offline.
Yeah.
Nothing's been said about this yet, but in my fantasy world that I keep in my head, the perfect response of the President of the United States to that disinvitation to the well of the House to deliver his address would be to say, okay, fine, Nancy, then I'm going to take it the show on the road. And we're going to be in Brownsville, Texas, or
El Paso,
or you name the place where they have a lot of trouble with illegal migrants coming across. I'd be staging it right there.
Yuma, Arizona.
Right on the border. And basically say, because I want the American public to understand when I give the State of the Union what I'm talking about. You know, because as we saw last week, Jim Acosta, Mr. CNN, Mr. He Can't Stand Trump, Mr. They had a falling out in the White House press room, basically confirmed the president's theory on the effectiveness of a wall as he went to, because there are spots along the border where there have been barriers put up.
Several long spots.
We call them checkpoints.
Checkpoints,
okay. Well, one of the ones he was standing in front of happened to be steel slats that are vertical, going and reaching up like
12 or 15 feet.
Yeah. feet. And basically, in Acosta's reporting, he basically said that there have been very few attempts to try to get over the wall. And it's like, thank you very much, Jim, for making the point that the president's been making.
Well, he also made a big deal about cuts in the wall.
Yes.
And it turns out that he said it would be very easy to breach this wall. And when they showed a picture of it, it was clearly done with an acetylene torch. Now, I and not just me, we actually, it's a knee slapper because, what, you think illegal migrants are dragging an oxyacetylene torch through the desert so they can cut
through
the
wall? Sure they are, Chuck, sure they are.
I mean, seriously. And what you find out is that...
They're using Army surplus debt cord is what they're using.
What you find out is it's areas of the wall that are under repair.
Right, exactly.
And now somebody said, you really want this thing to be foolproof? Put some rebar in it and pour concrete down in the hollow spots. You won't cut that with an acetylene torch. You might with one of those diamond cutting blades.
Yeah.
You cut through the steel, you use a steel blade first and then you use a stone blade. But how you're going to cut around that torch from the other side of the wall, you know, cut around the steel on the other side of the wall, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But the fact is that it's not impenetrable, but the Democrats sitting around talking about all they have to do is carry a ladder. Well, again, you're going to drag a 27-foot ladder through the desert? I don't think so.
I've had a 12-foot, one of those, step ladders. That thing is heavy.
I have a 27-footer, and it weighs a ton.
Wait a minute. Do you have an extension ladder or do you have a step ladder?
I have.
The gatefold.
Okay. I have a gatefold that is both an A-frame ladder and an extension ladder.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And it weighs 80 pounds,
at least 90 pounds.
Yeah. I can struggle it up by myself. And we use it here because when it's completely unfolded in an A, I have a 12-foot ceiling, and I can change light bulbs.
Sure.
Without extending it. When I extend it, it's really up there. and when we unfold it and bring it all the sections out, just say I could do logging in the upper part of trees with that thing.
Well, and that may be a good use for that.
Yeah, it might be.
Hey, if you ever decide to get rid of it, you know who you can sell it to. Well, anyhow, so Acosta made this whole thing about the wall. So I think that if Pelosi wants to get out from the confines of the House, which this would be the first time, except for maybe during the War of 1812, when the British burned the White House, that we would actually have a president not give the State of the Union address.
No, that's actually not true. And I'll
tell you. Who did?
It used to be delivered almost regularly in writing. Now,
that's true. I'm just saying in modern times.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you say modern times, as soon as it became clear that it was a PR thing, and you're right, modern presidency.
That was under Lincoln, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Lincoln on the radio.
That's right.
Early use of the radio. Roosevelt.
Yeah, it was around Roosevelt.
Roosevelt started, hey, we can use this as a radio opportunity. And he did. Because he was a master of using the media.
Yes, he was.
And they were more than happy. You know, they were all Roosevelt lovers, except a guy named John T. Flynn, who, even though a liberal, hated Roosevelt because he said Roosevelt is a Marxist. If you've ever read Flynn's The Roosevelt Myth or As We Go Marching or,
there's several books, yes.
Great books, and you can find them. Who is reprinting them? I think one of the libertarian houses is reprinting them, because I just bought a barely used copy of The Roosevelt Myth. I'm trying to find As We Go Marching, and it's not easy to find.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's... I can't think of one that's been skipped in my lifetime. Now, my political memory goes back maybe to 1968, but I can't remember one from 1968 on where it was skipped. The president has always stood in the well of the House of Representatives and given the State of the Union address.
Yes.
Always. Now, you may not have seen this yet, because this is a new story. Nancy Pelosi had a foreign trip planned. Okay, good. You did see it. Trump denies military aircraft for Nancy Pelosi's foreign trip during shutdown. He said, no military jets, fly commercial.
That's right. You know what? That's a great response because, you know, if we can't use the House because of the shutdown, then we can't use
military
planes.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. Yeah, it's a shame because I think that trip was to Brussels and to Egypt, and I forget how many other places they were
Brussels,
going to.
Brussels, Egypt, and Afghanistan.
And Afghanistan, okay. He might be doing Nancy a favor. You never know.
Well, you never know.
But the whole point is that, again, if you really wanted to do a fait accompli, have the State of the Union address at the border in front of one of the barriers talking about how it's irresponsible
exactly.
for Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats to allow these gaps to continue and to bring the funding for the wall.
Now, I sent you a copy of a URL for an article from Bloomberg.com.
Okay.
And it's in your email. You probably didn't get it before we started.
Probably not.
Okay. Here, politics and policy. This is the section that's under in Bloomberg.com. Pelosi knows how to play chicken and Trump doesn't.
Okay. Well, this is Michael Bloomberg, who's all but a socialist himself, and he's a homer for the Democratic Party. I have no doubt that a news organ that he's funding is going to be saying that. But the point is that Nancy might be able to play chicken. Donald knows how to cook them. And he's been cooking her chicken for a while now. She just hasn't realized she's been cooked. Let's put it this way. She is not, the Atlantic magazine, this week's edition of Atlantic, big front page, you know, on the cover, dark blue background with red letters, impeach. They're calling for the impeachment of Donald Trump. And I'm trying to say, okay, give me the actual legitimate grounds for impeachment that are documentable and that are verifiable.
What high crime or misdemeanor?
Exactly.
Because those are the only grounds permitted.
Yep.
That's it.
That is.
Now, what's a misdemeanor mean? Well, a high crime is a felony. The misdemeanors that they're talking about are like the big ones. Stuff that really is, in modern day, is probably a felony.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're not talking, people are saying we could impeach, because of the language of the Constitution, we could impeach Trump if he spits on the sidewalk. No, you can't.
Well, no, you probably couldn't. Although they want to try. Again, the other thing is, Chuck, just like with this whole thing with the Logan Act and the reason why that doesn't fly, whether it's about hotels or anything else, even if it was about running for the White House and they were trying to get dirt on Hillary. I'm sorry, is dirt on Hillary an official government function? Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it is, because maybe that's the reason why her servers got wiped.
Look, there's a whole mess of stuff out there. Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation cleaned up when the United States of America basically gave Russia, sold it to them for a huge amount of money, a huge stake in our uranium deposits. What, you think Russia doesn't have its own uranium deposits? Of course they do. Why do they want to tie ours up? That's a dumb question. I'm sorry, that's a stupid question.
Yeah.
To keep us from using it.
True.
Now, the Clinton Foundation cleaned up when Hillary, as Secretary of State, okayed that. Everybody keeps looking at it and saying, oh, there's no problem here. Of course there's a problem here, especially when Bill Clinton got $500,000 personally for a speaking engagement there. Can you point to something similar with Donald Trump? And the answer is no. That's why this is a bugaboo. If you look deep enough into Trump, this is why the House of Representatives now with a Democratic majority wants to dig in and have a look at Trump's tax returns. They're sure they can find something illegal.
They're trying to generate something to hang it on.
Look, we all know anybody who's dealt with regulatory bodies knows you might think you're in compliance. They can find something you're out of compliance on. Why? Because the regulations are written so vaguely that if someone wants to pressure you, you can be pressured.
True.
That's exactly what's going on here.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that a bit. But the point is that in order to pressure somebody, you have to find a point where it actually hurts them. I mean, Chuck, I could sit here all day long and press right here on my forehead, and I'm sure our listening audience can see this.
Oh, yeah.
I can sit here all day long and press on my forehead, but is that going to force me to change? Or if somebody did it, is that going to force me to capitulate to what they want? No, because it doesn't hurt.
Well, it will eventually, but it doesn't right now. And even if it does, you can be like,
who cares?
It hurts, but yeah. It doesn't hurt that bad.
Now, if they're pressing a finger in my eyeball, I might want to capitulate a lot faster.
Okay, think of the Marathon Man. Do you ever see that movie, The Marathon Man?
I know the one you're talking. Yes, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Where the guy drills his teeth ties him to a chair and drills his teeth to get him to talk.
Yeah, well, we just lost some listeners over that. Yeah. Thanks, including me.
No, well, that's the 70s. It's been a long time ago. Don't rent it if you don't like that kind of thing. But it was a Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
And Laurence Olivier, I think, was the bad guy.
Yeah, I believe so.
But he plays a Nazi war criminal, and he wants some information that Hoffman supposedly has. I think he doesn't think he has it. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So they drill his teeth. Ugh, it's nasty. But yeah, you're right. This article is laughable. This one in Bloomberg. Here's a quote from it that just tells you, if you have to go to the HuffPo to get a quote, you're in bad shape. For one thing, as the HuffPost's Jennifer Bendery writes, this is quote-unquote classic Pelosi. There's little question that the speaker knows how to negotiate and how to fight. No, she doesn't know how to negotiate. We saw that in the negotiation session where Trump handed out candy last week, and we talked about it on last week's show. walked in... He said, if I give you this and this and this and this, everything you're asking for, are you going to give me my wall? And she said, we will never give you the wall. And Trump very wisely said, well, we have no negotiating ground at that point.
Yeah, we have nothing to talk about.
If this is an example of how Nancy Pelosi negotiates, then she is not a great negotiator in the slightest. She thinks she has the leverage. Everybody thinks that Trump's going to cave to public opinion who are mad about the government shutdown. One thing, I talked to a friend of mine at church who is affected by this. He works for a government agency, and he is not being paid and has been asked by his boss to do things, and he very willingly does it. He says, we're going to get paid at the end. But he goes, this could get sticky. But I talked to him about this last night, and we talked about this very thing, and he goes, this is the kind of thing that drives people nuts. And I said, you know, the problem here is that everybody's realizing how little they actually miss these particular government services. Oh, sure, you miss it when the line's 100 miles long at the TSA. And you may miss this or miss that. There will be wailing and gnashing of teeth on the first week in March when food stamp benefits are no longer available.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a long way off. That's 6 weeks from now. And we're already in the longest one in history. And Trump doesn't care about being embarrassed in the press. This is the major difference between Trump and all past Republicans. I can tell you that even Republicans that you and I talked about as being people we supported in the primaries in 16 would have collapsed by now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
They would collapse because they're afraid of what the press will do to them. And you know what? Trump's not afraid of what the press will do to him. He's already proven that. When you throw Jim Acosta out of the White House and it requires a court order of dubious value to get him back in. Have you noticed what he's been? Has he done that since in a presser?
No.
Why? Because he knows next time you're out and you're not coming back.
Now, again, Trump is cut from a different kind of cloth than most of the politicians on the Hill. That's the reason why now you've got people who are that the left and the leftist media see as his allies on the Hill being attacked. And the first person who's been attacked, Chuck, none other than, and I can't believe I'm saying this because probably if you'd have rolled the clock back 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have been yay. But now it's like, oh, and that's Senator Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham.
I hate saying it because
yeah, I know.
I'm not a big fan of Lindsey Graham in any way, shape, or form. But what's happened now is that a sitting member of the U.S. House of Representatives, Representative Ilhan Omar, a Democrat from Minnesota who happens to be
Muslim.
Has started and has picked up, started, worked with these liberal sources, the Democratic Coalition and others, and they're basically have spun out through Twitter, and now it's being picked up by MSNBC and CNN, of course. One news outlet references it, homophobic conspiracy theory against Lindsey Graham. Well, I maybe they're misusing. What they've done is they're spinning a conspiracy theory that Lindsey Graham is a closet homosexual, and therefore Trump's got something on him, and that's why he's backing Trump.
Do you think Lindsey Graham cares if anybody knows whether or not? I mean, he basically, when he's asked, he's been asked before, he's like, it's none of your business. Are you a homosexual? He's like, none of your business. The fact that he's never been married and he doesn't have a girlfriend and he doesn't stock his office with 26-year-old girls who look like they should be in a modeling agency rather than in a federal office,
mm-hmm.
He's like, it's really none of your business.
Okay, barring any of that, the whole key point is the left is doing
exactly
what they condemn the right. That they say does, and that is focusing on and highlighting as a way to denigrate or devalue a human being based upon their sexuality. For the left, that's heresy. If we started saying something about Nancy Pelosi and her choice of paramours. Being all of the, it was XX chromosomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We would be considered hateful, homophobic, beneath contempt, bigoted.
Yeah, just
white supremacist. The list can go on and on. However, what you have now is you have MSNBC, the Democratic, the head of the Democratic Coalition, and a sitting member of the United States Congress who are all out there and all leftists basically saying, well, Lindsey Graham's a closet homosexual and that's the reason why Trump's got him over a barrel. And, you know, and let's see, and how they put this. And I'm trying to do this so that it's not
salacious.
Salacious.
Yeah.
That's right. Because I don't want it to be salacious. Okay, here it is. And of course, this gets picked up by Tom Elliott. He picks up Representative Omar's comments that she made on CNN and says, Representative Omar, quote, lots of Americans agree with me that Trump is blackmailing Senator Graham over his homosexuality.
Well, that's a statement of fact that based on facts, not in evidence.
Exactly. It's begging the question.
It's a fallacy. Yeah, it's exactly. It's begging the question.
Begging the question.
It's assuming the results of the argument without making the argument.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't proven that, and even if you did, then what? Because the fact is that Lindsey Graham doesn't care if he gets outed or not if he is one.
Exactly.
Doesn't seem to. In fact, he'll just strong arm anybody who basically says I have all this evidence. He'd be like, yeah, whatever. No comment.
Yeah. See now, the head of the Democratic, the chairman of the Democratic Coalition, a guy by the name of John Cooper, also had tweeted this out on his account. So it's basically a Republican just told me he doubts Lindsey Graham is kowtowing to Trump and indirectly Putin. See how they're trying to put this on the other?
Again, that begs the question.
Begs the question. Because he's being blackmailed, the Republican says he doubts that he's backing Trump because of their claim. He's being blackmailed over his sexual orientation. And then he puts in parentheses, an open secret.
Well, that means it's still secret.
Exactly. Well, but he's using that to say, confirm, we know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we know what's going on. Or even financial corruption.
You know what that's called? That's called doxing.
Yes, it is. It's doxing.
And in fact, the Democratic Party is engaging in a practice that they would find abhorrent on this. And in fact, they would go so far to great lengths to make it look like someone was being doxed when they weren't by the right. But here we have, I think, Lindsey Graham. You and I discussed this at lunch. The reason Lindsey Graham is out there pushing for Trump and his agenda is the fact that
he has to come up on a reelect.
He has
next
a reelect
year.
Coming up. 2020, I think he's up for reelection, and
yes,
he wants to keep his job. And there were people actively raising money to get a conservative replacement for Lindsey Graham.
Right. And now he's reinvented himself as a conservative.
Exactly. Now, does that mean after he's reelected in 2020? He's suddenly seen the light and the error of his ways. No, I don't kid myself. But you know what? I'll take allies when I can get them.
Yes, and you'll have them for about another 18 to 20 months.
My whole point, and then out with you and I will be here saying, we told you this would probably happen. Let's be realistic, folks. This is a realistic political. Barry and I take a very. You might think it's cynical. I'd say it's realism. We take a realistic view of these things.
And we wouldn't sound so smug if they weren't so obstinate about being wrong.
I have to laugh again. I'll go back to this Bloomberg article where they talk about trouble is Trump and other Republicans who want the shutdown. Nobody wanted the shutdown. Nobody.
Yeah, nobody was looking for a shutdown.
Nobody wanted a shutdown. Anybody who says that Trump wanted a shutdown, and that's the gist of this article, that Trump wanted it. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. But he was willing to do it to advance the agenda.
Well,
you know what could have killed this off, Barry? If the Republicans, when they were in control, now let's go back. Paul Ryan is the direct cause of this.
Yes, he is.
And let me tell you something.
Paul Ryan is responsible for the shutdown.
Paul Ryan, don't be surprised if he shows up as a senatorial candidate.
Oh, no doubt. Either that or he runs again with Romney.
That's
a possibility.
It's a possibility. No, too early to tell. But the fact is that Paul Ryan is completely at fault at this because, if you remember, Trump said, I'll sign one of these, but this is the only one.
Yeah.
And you know why he did it?
When they did it back in September.
Yeah. To avoid a shutdown.
Yeah.
So don't tell me that Trump wanted a shutdown. He said, I warned you before, I'd do it. Now, Paul Ryan and the boys could have gotten this job done last year when they had both houses.
Yep. They chose not to do so.
They chose not to do so. Why? I'll be quite honest. Paul Ryan's a never Trumper. Mitch McConnell's a never Trumper who basically is playing pro Trump right now.
In order to continue to hold his Senate leadership.
In order to maintain Senate leadership.
Yep.
This is how the game is played, folks. The enemy of my enemy is not necessarily my friend. Bottom line.
It is. That's exactly what it's going to.
And you have to learn how to kind of put the pieces of this puzzle together. It's important that you do that. And we're here to help you. In fact, you should be at our website, www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And I'll do that again at the end of the show.
This is the end of the show.
No, not quite. Not quite. We got about 5 minutes left.
Okay. You'll cut that.
And who knows how many minutes will be when I finally end up editing this thing. Yeah, well. It'll be somewhere in that vicinity. Yep. But that being said, we're sitting here watching this. How's it all going to come out? Here's what I think is going to happen. I think at some point the Democrats are going to cave on some funding, because when you see them interviewed in places like on Fox News, what are you getting? Well, you know, walls are effective in some places.
Yeah.
The best suggestion I've heard so far is for a Republican to stand up in the House and offer a bill that says, since walls are immoral, we need to have them all taken down. So here's a bill to remove all walls. You know what would happen instantly? First, it would never make it to a committee.
No, it wouldn't.
It would be assigned to committee and get a vote, and they'd be like, we're not even going to touch this. Why? Well, gosh, you guys said it was immoral and that walls were bad and they don't work. So Why are we wasting money maintaining these things? Take them down. Spend the money someplace else. That's not going to happen.
No, it won't.
No, they're going to cough up some money. Trump's going to give them something. I heard a suggestion the other day. You and I were talking about this, and we kind of both laughed about it. Some guy comes in and says, why don't we promise them a Democrat, you know, a liberal replacement for Ruth Bader Ginsburg in return for wall funding? And I'm like, well, the host I heard answer this question said, first of all, Trump wasn't elected to give the farm away.
Well, that's true.
Second of all, he can get the wall without surrendering Supreme Court nominations.
You know, but and you know, when you told me that you'd heard, what was my first response?
Your first response was,
organizationally and operationally, that doesn't have any logic to it, because the House approves funding, because all budgets have to start in the House of Representatives, all appropriations measures, and so the House has got to make that call. But they have no call whatsoever by constitutional, and since Nancy Pelosi is a constitutional scholar, she should recognize this, that the House has absolutely no play whatsoever in the seating of justices of the United States Supreme Court. It is nominated by the president and is confirmed
by the Senate.
By the Senate, and the Senate alone. Not a joint resolution of the House and the Senate, just the Senate, which means that Nancy Pelosi not only doesn't have co-equal power with President Trump, as she's been claiming, she doesn't even have co-equal power with Mitch McConnell.
No.
Especially over the courts. They have no authority. Now, can the House bring bills, and can they begin impeachments against court justices? Well, sure could. And I'd love to see them start against some of the ones who have been basically turning the Constitution on its ear, but I don't think that that's ever going to rise to that level for them.
We've been calling for that for years.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But, you know, that again, realizing that that's unrealistic.
Well, let's put it this way. It's really as unrealistic as them getting a conviction on President Trump for impeachable offenses that they still haven't, that are yet to be named. I can see when they file the articles of impeachment, he's being impeached for the crimes and misdemeanors of, to be determined.
Yeah. You know, you can't do that. And
you can't do a TBD. That's just, no. It doesn't work.
No. So does Nancy really know how to play chicken? No, she doesn't.
Like I said, she doesn't even realize when one's getting cooked and it's her.
That's right. She is playing chicken, but she's plucked and in the pot.
Yep.
Now, they have power for 2 years until the end of Donald Trump's term. What will they do? It looks to me like they're working real hard to get him reelected.
I think that's probably what it's going to end up being, because, you know, if you're basically going to sit there and do juvenile things and allow the hardcore progressive left of your party, i.e., Ocasio-Cortez,
Tlaib,
Rashida Tlaib, et cetera, to basically have free reign and fetter, then I really am struck dumb by how you think you're going to get anywhere electorally.
Well, the beauty of this is it's all in the crystal ball, and you and I are not psychic or prophets. Therefore, we'll wait and see how this plays out. In the meantime, we'll be giving you commentary. That being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.